When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？見えない。
あ、こんなところ。
あ、What's good, Internet? It's March 28th, 2023, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 553. I'm your host, Rob Zachney, and I'm joined by Ricardo Contreras.
Did not accidentally type 522 on the last Waypoint Radio episode, listener. You didn't see that? No one saw it.
Well, many people saw that, and I saw lots of questions about, like, why'd that episode disappear from my feed, and I kind of wondered what was going on.
I was like, if they're podcasts.
But then I was like, I'm on vacation. You know who wasn't on vacation? Was Patrick Klepek.
No, but I will be by the time you listen to this.
Oh, whoa. Vacation Patrick is Ghost logged Patrick. On.
I don't know. With, like, there's, like, this week could go a lot of ways based on... my child, who did not... seemed like they were on a trajectory towards sick on Sunday evening... seemed okay today and was handed off to my mother to watch and hopefully pass, have the sick ship pass on a Monday. But it's possible that I too will be struck with the, you don't get a vacation. You just get to be at home with a kid for 3 days, depending on how things go.
Well, that wasn't me. I was my own kid in that case. When I was like, I have COVID and I'm baby.
Yeah, but then you also
speaking
went into
a baby.
We
also have on her vacation countdown
Jesus
timer,
Christ.
Renata Price.
Oh my God! Hi.
So,
look, we can tell what's
everyone. Everyone have a fun week.
You got to tell me about this crawl space.
Let me tell you this: the king of executive function was in residence during my vacation week.
You were like legitimately hauling junk away, right? Like going taking quantities of
and
objects.
What I could not haul away, I had people with a truck come and remove from my house. Also, in that process, I learned just how hard it is to dispose of hazardous materials. There's only two pickup days a year where my city will take things like pesticides, paints, all sorts of chemical stuff. But of course, there is convenient year-round disposal at two locations in Massachusetts, each of which is over an hour's drive away.
You can't take them to like a hardware store? There are hardware stores around here that'll take paint.
You know what? I haven't considered that option, so I will call some of the hardware stores around here.
Yes, definitely do that. Like there's an Ace Hardware. I think Ace Hardware is just a Midwest thing, but like they, not all of them.
We just got Lowe's and Home Depot around here.
But some place, like if you have I would ask around because some hardware places you can drop them off and for a fee, they'll dispose of paint for you.
We've got Ace and Do It Best in the city here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if Ace
Well,
was
actually,
there.
Those both of those companies are... like
Ace
store.
Isn't a company, right?
Right.
Like a franchise thing? They're a network of independent like hardware stores.
I think the name for it is a marketing co-op because they all share the same marketing, but they're all independently owned stores. Yeah.
The Northeastern United States is pretty well connected by rail line, Rob. Have you considered just going to the nearest like train track and just finding a passing Norfolk Southern train and just being like, here,
or
take
just
these.
Dump it by the railroad tracks and be like, they probably derailed. There was a weird train. It was carrying two things of an insecticide, a couple things of paint, and that was all it was carrying.
We were lucky. This one wasn't bad.
We did it. So it was a week call up, but the crawl space was, so I had this Christmas tree and I had this idea where it was like, we're going to get an artificial tree and there's going to be no allergies for, you know, the holiday season. Instead there was COVID, but that wasn't part of the original plan. And
didn't get a COVID tree. That wasn't that one.
Yeah. How'd
you do that, Rob?
Like I was decorating it and I was like, ooh, these allergies are really acting up. Boy, I'm going to keep loudly talking about my allergies. as I try to deny what is evidently happening to me. Anyway, so the addition was finished weeks ago, and then I was like, all right, now we can start cleaning this place up and get this tree out of here. And then I was like, I still want a place to put the tree, except this crawl space, which I have never fully plumbed its depths since we moved in here. There's things back there that, like, I have never seen with my own eyes, or hadn't until this past week.
Wait, so these are objects that are not yours.
Right.
They're just, ooh.
Some of it, Patrick. And by the way, so this is a contributing, part of the, why are the mice so bad in this apartment?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It looks to me like the original builder back in the 80s, when they finished, they had too much carpet. So they just took huge, like too big for me to lift, trimmings of cut carpet and carpet liner, jammed it in the lowest part of the crawl space beneath the stairs,
mm-hmm.
and bounced. And so for 30 years, there has been a huge pile of warm, soft, insulating carpeting material in the crawl space beneath my stairs. That I still haven't dealt with because it's like, that's like, from what I could observe, that I think is going to be like, the secret of NIMH in there. It's going to be, it's going to be intense. So I'm not fucking with that right now.
Okay, so that was just put to the side. I problem identified, but
cool.
Will not deal with.
Cool compost pile living under your stairs. Mm-hmm. I bet that's really good for the air quality in your home.
Yeah, so I did. So, here's the thing. It wasn't as gnarly as I feared. I do think most of the mice have sort of been chased out in previous months. It was a lot of vacuuming. But mostly the big thing was just, like, excavating layers of old toxic materials that, like, my landlady left here years ago. Ancient grout left from probably some patch jobs in the bathroom.
Ancient grout is my favorite thing that the Legend of Zelda guardians drop when you kill them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my favorite thing in Elden Ring that I use to upgrade my sword. If I want to go to +10, I need more ancient grout. Where does that drop?
So it was real cool because my vacation started basically with I'm going to tackle a few of these tasks. And then, it'll all be wrapped up by like Sunday, Monday at the outside. And then
tasks beget tasks.
That was the dark secret.
Always what happens with house tasks. You all you're doing is opening a door to a multiverse of other housing options that are difficult to close.
By like Sunday afternoon, the apartment looked worse than it had before I started. Like there was more
darkest
shit
before
out in the
dawn,
room.
Rob. I hear you.
Yeah. And so I didn't let myself get discouraged. Again, king of executive function. I kept churning through it, made the hard choices, got rid of things.
Like what? I need to, this is why basically I started this crawl space conversation. When you get to the point where you were hauling things away, asking people to take stuff away. It's like, are we talking books or are we talking things? Obviously, even we could all agree that of course you would get rid of this. I'm curious what level the king of executive function allowed themselves to indulge in during the
donated
this
a fair
process.
Number of books, but mm-hmm. I needed to donate more. I just didn't like have access to enough of them to sort of survey what I want to get rid of. Got rid of a lot of like old hardware stuff. A lot of like a lot of stuff piles up. Like there's a ton of like old cleaning stuff that had piled up. Stuff we bought like 3 or 4 times over thinking we had, because also the thing I discovered is we are amazing at losing stuff. And so, like, from Mina's puppy days, there were, like, 4-gallon jugs of, like, odor-killing stain remover that we had bought. And I swear to God, every time we bought one of those, we used it once. And then, like, 2 days later, we must have had an exchange that was like, where's the stain remover thing? We got to clean up after. Oh, we don't have. I don't know where it is. All right, let's get another one delivered.
My mom is famous for this level of like basic forgetting of things purchased, where especially if you go to her house, you'll open up the fridge and it's an adventure. It's like, which thing has she bought 7 times this time. Like, and it's even worse at like my parents' little lake house. Like, we took some friends up there a month or so ago and was like, open it up. And it's like, well, there's not much food in here, but there are 7 mustards. Because every time she'd go up, she's like, well, we're probably going to do some grilling, and then would bring things for grilling, forgetting she'd done that every other time. Mustards. No, these are just, this is, come on, Bob.
Excuse me, those are my Rob, dipping mustards.
This is some yellow ass mustard copied and pasted 6 times. It's Wisconsin, please.
So that was another part of it, was like a lot of rationalizing storage. Like all the like floor cleaning stuff like ended up in one cabinet now. And it's like, we know where that shit is. Mm-hmm. All the various, we had done an amazing job of squirreling screwdrivers, power drills, not with the drill bits. So there's the like serious, not fucking around high torque drill. And nice. Then there's the like, just need to like, you know, drill into some drywall real quick drill. So there's 2 of them.
Yeah.
This is MK's fine. Way.
I imagine drills as being more than 2 for some reason. Because you always got the 2, right? You got the like, yeah.
Yeah. There's the monster that's like kind of unwieldy and you just don't want to bust it out every day.
There's the fuck around drill and the find out drill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But crucially, are they stored with their drill bits? No, they were not.
Of course not.
And also to add on to that, of course, there's the big like box of drill bits. The you know, the layer of things you put in your toolbox, of course. But, you know, then there's your favorite drill bits, the high use ones, which you store in a different place. Much the same way that when you have an assortment of screwdrivers for every size and every occasion, you take your 4 or 5 most useful and you put those somewhere else where you surely won't lose them because you'll need to refer back to them a lot.
Oh, no.
And then you never see them again. And I did not recover those during the week of excavation. Those are gone. But, you know, and then it culminated. Once I got all this done, I had to wrestle that tree to the ground. It was like dressing a carcass.
Did you put it, put it down?
Yeah.
Would you keep your loose pieces of metal from like various assembly things? Like I assume that there's somewhere in the Zachney household, there is just like a box filled with loose metal.
That's a great question, Ren. I'm happy to report that there is a really sturdy cardboard shipping box that we have that is full, not just of loose pieces of metal, but also prospective laminate samples we've looked at, you know, excess bits of trim, etc. All that
like,
stuff gets
piled. Ren, could you just throw that out and like your life wouldn't change?
No, there are like hinges for my closet doors in here. Like because I took my because in my bedroom, this room is this closet sucks. The doors suck on it, and so I had to take the closet doors off so I had room to put my bed in. And so, yeah, I keep the hinges for the doors in the metal tube, which I'm currently holding in my left hand. Let's see. There's some hinges in here. There's just some. What's that? Oh, cool. A screwdriver.
Is that a putter?
No, it's a Allen key.
Okay. It looks like a wrench.
Yeah, Ren actually strikes me as the sort of person who, like, midway through the day would, like, take out her putter and like, put a little cup on its side and put down some, like, Titleists and just practice some putting for him.
Yeah, this is several pounds, though. I was just curious where the metal in Rob Zachney's home lives, because I assume, and I think I'm correct to assume this, Rob, that there is just a part of your home that you no longer remember where it is that is just, like, piles of loose metal.
So actually, unfortunately, I discovered that box after the trash people had come through, and I was like, oh shit, this would have been perfect to send off with them. But yeah, so like, you know, got through all that. The place was really starting to shape up, and it was like middle of the week, and I was like, still some quality vacation time ahead of me. And then my PC didn't boot.
Oh, it yeah, kept I saw
locking
I saw
up on the I guess it's not really the BIOS screen anymore, but you know, the motherboard like splash screen.
That's a BIOS, right?
I guess technically
can it's you not, still hit F12 and go to a, you know, isn't that what you have to hit?
Totally unresponsive.
But that's what you used to do, right? It was right. F12 at like,
and that's still there. You still, like, the minute if you're trying to get to safe mode, you're immediately like tapping that and everything. So it had done this once a couple weeks ago, right after we had a blizzard with a power cut, which kind of makes me angry because the thing's plugged into an UPS, and so that's the whole point of having this giant brick.
Yeah, you've had issues with this PC before, though, right? I don't know if this specific
This is the new build that supplanted the one where I couldn't chase down with these power issues.
Okay, all right. And then maybe that's what I'm remembering. Work with Rob long enough, and then the cycle of PC problems repeats itself as opposed to being anything else.
So I do the whole thing, like, what could it be? And some of the answers are really simple. Like, could be bad RAM. Open up your computer, take the RAM out. Like, you know, put it in different RAM.
Slot it back in. Quick point
of clarification, Rob. I don't remember. When you made the new build from when you were having the power problems originally, is it completely new or were some components brought over?
Fresh RAM.
Okay.
Fresh motherboard, all that stuff. But the things that are carried over are a couple of the hard drives, but not the OS drive.
Okay.
So it's a pretty new system drive. Anyway, so like there's a day where it's like Wednesday or Thursday, I have to reboot this thing like 8 times before it finally boots up. And I'm like, okay, this seems pretty fucked. So I start like going through troubleshooting and I'm still having issues throughout the day. None of the easy fixes solve it. The RAM stuff doesn't work. The whole, you know, take the little battery off your motherboard and, you know, give it time to sort of reset. And that, like, didn't make a difference. At that point, it's kind of looking like this might be a bad drive or, God help us, could be like a power supply issue, whatever. And the sand in the vacation hourglass is running down. I'm like, well, I need a PC. That's just science. Like, I can't go back to work without some sort of PC solution in place.
Did you click on the link you sent me? Is this where this ends up? Is the link you sent me what you're about to tell me?
Oh, Patrick, by that point I'd done it 20 minutes ago.
You
could have taken this to like a local person to diagnose. You just went to click this link and just purchase it.
So it's not really like a local person that I have that like is there, but also it's like all the fixes still would have been time consuming. You know what I mean? Mm. It's like still it would have been another thing where it's like going to have to, like probably like, it'd be really annoying. Is it the system drive? So you have to get a new system drive in there so I can do, like, you know, check that out. If it's the power supply, that's going to be a nightmare to diagnose because I do not have a spare power supply, I don't think, around here. So all sorts of reasons why, Patrick,
that's right. You have the local person with the power. Anyway. I don't have that local person.
I don't.
There's always a harbor person in every city. I live in a suburban town and there's one down the street from me that does computer repairs. But anyway, continue. I guess the city of Boston just doesn't have them.
Well, like, if I was in Boston, that's a different matter. Micro Center is right there in Boston, but I'm in Lowell.
Okay. Anyway, it's not like none of this matters. You already bought, like, it doesn't, I don't even know why I'm throwing my hands up. Continue.
Well, because the thing is, like, this PC is not being junked. It's going to get fixed, but like I needed a, you know, safe.
There we go.
A redundant solution. And since we are taught, like, since we're in that realm, you know, long term, this PC is going to be a capture PC anyway. So
you'll never do that.
Whatever is the new machine. Well,
you're never going to get that machine repaired. It is just going to sit there in the corner. And you're never going to use it as a capture PC. I want this to be clipped out.
Hold on.
Repeated back to me a year from now.
Oh, so, I haven't gotten to the best part. Hold on. So anyway. Oh,
Jesus.
So I'm like, MK was on a business trip. And I was like, bad news. PC's haunted. And she was like, I'm so sorry, man. Your vacation has really sucked. You know, I think you should just buy a PC. And I was like, funny you should mention that. I have some options. And, you know, I'm not one for half measures. And you know, with the current state.
This is why I stopped consulting you about my PC. You're like, Patrick, I've just kept sending me links. Like, I don't understand why you're getting this GPU. And it's like, I have cut you out of this recommendation process. I'm going back to Brad Shoemaker and I'm picking out my PC because I'm pretty sure I looked at the one you bought.
What? Okay. Okay. Rob, before I ask, which 40 series card?
Oh, the only one that makes sense.
Okay. Just say it out loud. Say it out loud into the microphone, Rob.
God damn it.
The 4090.
Yeah, okay, got it.
But that's rational. The 40 series has a huge issue where the 4090, while the most expensive card, is also the price performance winner. Like,
how much does a 4090 cost?
12?
Like 12 what?
100, 1200.
No, I know what I know what the additional word was.
Are you sure?
I just want to make you
most
have
of
to
the
say
ones
it.
I'm seeing here on BestBuy.com start at 1500.
I feel like the MSRP maybe it was 1500. You know,
that's maybe? Just the deal
I got. I'm not asking
maybe
to price. I look, man. I'm only pointing out the funniest thing about this point of comparison, which is that your GPU approaches fairly closely to the total price of my entire PC.
Yeah, same.
Which is
yeah, bro. That's how much my computer costs.
That's why I was asking. I get why Rob has been Beetlejuicing a 4090 into his life for the better part of a year now. And so that part I get. I'm just cracking up that my Costco PC is more or less with tax, like roughly the same price as the GPU he got.
Now, the other thing is, you don't want to buy a 4090 and then CPU lock it. You can't have that shit going on.
Right, Rob. Right.
So you basically have to pair it with an i9 13900K.
That's
just, again, like, that's just kind of the science of where this is at right now.
Do you have a total there? You're willing to share with us?
So the thing is, I was like, we're into a pre-built, right? Like, and then we're going to decide which pre-built is it going to be as to who's like ready to ship and ready to roll. And so it turned out, it was like between MSI and Corsair, both had machines ready to go. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, the Corsair was just speaking to me. I read some really great reviews about it.
The lapdog was howling from the vice offices.
Brand loyalty. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Gotta get the reward points. I mean, what's the point if not to have that fill up so you can get a $10 gift certificate?
And obviously, you know,
to be used in the merch store though, not to buy computers.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, this one, the MSI only had 32 paltry gigabytes of RAM.
Right.
This one has 64. Now, is that a useful number? No, not at all.
To use on what? You don't do video editing.
I don't, but it just came with it. It wasn't even an option I selected. Once you pick the 4090, your options, like, life gets real simple.
Rob specced out like a 4K VFX editor's machine so that he can run strategy games at like a slightly higher frame rate.
So I got this thing.
You did, didn't you?
Let's see. Vengeance. Oh my God.
Sarah Vengeance. Jesus.
Oh, well, at least it was a special price, Rob. Look at that discount you got.
See, no, like, I was like, Pat is going to be so proud because they crossed out the big number and there's a slightly smaller number, and that's what I'm getting.
$100 less. $100 less. This is more money than I've ever had in my bank account. I'm gonna faint.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was more money than I had in my bank account, too.
No!
But again,
how did that one business day shipping go?
Well, it's on its way. Like I'm watching it come here. So it should be here. Well,
now, how are you
soon.
Speaking to us?
Yeah, Rob, how are you speaking to us?
the whole point was did the PC boot fine?
So I seal it up. Give up.
Yeah.
We're all done here.
Yeah.
Next day, it boots up just fine. Now, it'd been doing this, right? It's an intermittent problem.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
That was like 4 or 5 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And every morning it turns on just fine. And so my PC is kind of Michigan J frogging me here. Because I swear to God it was dead, but nobody was at home with me when it was like having these issues. MK, as I said, was on a business trip. Okay. Right. And so nobody saw the issue. And nobody saw like the things I did to try to fix it.
Are you trying to suggest your computer's trying to frame you?
Yeah, nobody saw Rob's computer stand up, sprout legs, and start dancing and singing, "Hello, my lady."
Yeah, exactly. So now we're in like day 4 or 5. The computer, you know, honestly, like, you know, working just fine.
Mm.
It's absolutely thriving. Oh, we have this computer on its way, but. That's not really an L, of course, because it's going to be a great machine. And hey, guess what? I've got this capture PC ready to roll.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. For all those times your PC has been crawling while you streamed Rome Total War. Got to have that capture PC to... I'm sure there'll be no problems, Rob, when you're connecting two machines to one another to try to stream off of. Nothing complicated there. It's just a cable.
No. Actually, hang on. This is like Kato sorted me out perfectly like ages ago on this.
Yeah.
It is very easy because there's a capture card in this PC. There's a capture card in
the PC.
And so all it does.
I don't believe either of you.
No. This was actually.
Pass a signal through.
This was MK's doing too. MK reached out to me and we sat down and talked through what the options were.
Oh,
Rob's been set up for a while to make this move. He was just waiting. Biding his time.
I guess this is as good a time as any. So this is obviously going to be, you know, I think it's sort of a crown jewel in the crown of the king of executive function. And I think this is kind of what I deserve. But there is one more. So I'm waiting on the L-shaped sit-stand desk that I was going to use to finish up this office.
Is it not a fully or did you go fully?
I went with, uplift.
The Jarvis.
Can I see this desk?
Pardon?
Can I see this desk?
You just go to uplift.com.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Isn't your current a Jarvis? No,
that's a different thing. That's like, that looks like a Ponzi scheme.
This is definitely a Ponzi scheme.
It's upliftdesk.com. But I went and I got a custom laminate desk because that gives you the full range of sizes they make. Mm-hmm. I got a L-shaped desk that'll fit like perfectly in the
uplift L-shaped. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Let me just look at these real quick. And this is the standing sitting one, the one that goes up and down.
Yeah, here it is. Here it is. The custom, oh, perfect. Custom that
would
L-shape.
That would be great if you could just link me this. That's great.
Yeah, so that's gonna be the desk. But obviously, you know, with capture PC and all that in play, gonna need two screens
at least.
Yeah. Well, I kind of wanted to keep it to two because I don't want to like completely overwhelm the space with screens. Like, this is also kind of a comfortable retreat. Yes, it's a studio, but it's also
what
a
do you
place
need two on the capture PC for.
Pardon?
What do you need two monitors on the capture PC for?
Well, one would be running the game and the other would be like, so like the capture PC when I'm like, when we're streaming, for instance.
Did you mean two each?
No.
Just two total.
There's going to be
two total.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Patrick's like, yeah, there's going to be a TV running the game that I'm watching for play. And then like the capture PC is going to be up in the monitor with like OBS on it and chat. And I can just handle stuff there. Very easy.
I mean, that makes sense. Like, I hear you say these words, and like, that is not too dissimilar from what I use on my single PC setup, where one screen has my, like, I'm monitoring the broadcast and chat, and the other one has the video game on it. This is all, that is the most reasonable thing you've said here. Now, Rob, what are the monitors?
Well, so I am a little OLED-pilled.
Oh my.
But yeah, also, like, I wanted to find a compromise between, like, a TV and a monitor. And that's kind of hard. Like, OLED monitors are really expensive, but it wasn't quite what I'm looking for. But then, boy, howdy, did I find just the perfect device. A little display that was made just for me.
Mm-hmm. It's curved. It's OLED. Let me just look at this. I'm just believe those things to be true.
No, Ren.
No, oh, look, I'm fucking right. I'm right. I've never been wrong in my life.
You gotta be fucking
I'm the smartest woman on the planet.
It's not just curved. It's not just curved.
It's not just curved. It flexes. It flexes. You motherfucker. I heard you talk about this.
You know what, Rob?
I cannot believe you've done this.
Amount of money has been on this setup. We've become the baddies. Like capitalism is bad. You just walked us through all this.
I'm gonna lay down.
Like that damn capitalism. Well, it sure allowed Rob to get a bunch of cool shit right here.
Jesus Christ, Rob.
So this is a normal size, right?
$500 off.
A 42-inch screen, Kato. And now here's the crucial 40, thing.
40, no, Kato. I know it's 42 fucking inches away from his face. Well, kidding me?
Hold on, that's because it is just the LG C2 TV screen, but it bends.
Rob, like, when you're streaming stuff for work, why not just use the other, like, HDMI input in the device like I do? Just, like, play it there and use the other monitor.
I don't like this monitor as much.
So it's a regular 16:9 screen.
Yeah.
Thank God.
No,
it's not ultra wide.
I was thinking about Kato. Like, throughout all of this, I was like, how can I make Kato's life better? And
this is great for me.
You could send him a check for 10 grand.
Send him a check for $10,000.
You know, if you're like, if that's what's in front of you, I got boy,
do you have any
I got an answer for you.
The credit card company charges on advances like that. There's some other features, though. So, because, yeah, the LG C2 42, like, that's not that expensive. But that's just a regular old TV screen. Doesn't bend. Doesn't flex. And, crucially, it doesn't come with a little fancy stand that has all sorts of adjustable stuff. So you can tilt it and turn it like a monitor without having to drill into your freshly painted walls and, like, really make commitments about where this thing is going to live and sit. And while they were back there building this little stand, those wizards at LG put in bias lighting.
Oh, that's great. Good for them.
What
are you saying to me?
What
right
does
now?
That mean?
Oh, it'll glow.
Cool.
It's got gamer LEDs. Jesus
Christ. Cool. It glows. Yeah, it glows, Rob. Is the glow cool for your eyes? Are you going to get the sequel to Eye Strain?
It helps your eyes. No, cool. It goes behind it. To
see, kind of, yeah, see, there's great. A logic to it. Yeah,
there is, unfortunately. Also not necessary.
Cool. Cool, 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 cool,
you
cool.
You could
cool,
turn
cool,
on cool. a light near your in your room, and that'll help as well.
So.
Wait, Rob, don't you have LEDs pointing at your face right now to keep you lit? Don't you already have lighting directly behind your monitor?
That's not what bias lighting is doing.
Oh, yeah, expound.
So, you've seen this. So, it's like when you're playing like a video game and it's got like, you know, the screen has a color scheme as you're playing through it. Bias lighting will throw in complementary backlighting that will both like pleasingly enhance the contrast while reducing eye strain from you looking at the screen. And so your room will, as you play a game, will just like flicker with splashes and whirls of color that are sort of referring to the action on the screen of the game you're playing.
It looks like car under light. Looks like car under lighting for a fucking PC monitor.
But you have to imagine it casting a therapeutic glow.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. I can see the therapeutic glow. Yeah, yeah. I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but now it's over. Like the darkness is lifted. All the stuff will be, well, so this thing's really backordered and it's kind of hard to get. And I gave these people some money and they haven't called me in like weeks to put my order in.
Stepping it back.
No, it's a respectable business.
Who did you give this money to? Who did you give this money to? Is it not the website you linked to us?
No, I did not buy it from the manufacturer. I bought it from a local business.
Okay.
But anyway, when I asked about the status of the order, they didn't call me back. But I'm sure it's fine. I'll call them again soon.
That's so. You didn't do this in person?
No, I just I spoke my credit card number over the phone, and Rob, they took it, and the charge went through.
Quick question. Now, did you get the $499.01 off currently listed on the LG website?
Yeah, of course.
So you paid the number listed on the LG website for this device.
Yeah.
That's about what my PC cost 10 years ago.
We're in the honesty room, Rob. I just want to clarify that the number on this website is what you spoke into the credit card on your phone. Sorry, your phone on
for TVs that you can buy for, like, TVs have never been cheaper.
Yeah. Also, how far away from your face is it going to be?
It's going to be about. You look at the uplift screen here. I think it'll be like 30 inches. It's going to be pretty close. Good thing it's going to flex. Yeah.
There's pictures of gamers here sitting like inches from this thing. And I'm like, why? Why do you do this to yourself?
Classic Rob's acne right here.
Yeah, this is Rob. That's Rob.
Okay, that is not me. That is not me. Arm behind the monitor? Absolutely not. No.
Look at how close Rob is there, leaning into his strategy games. Leaning back to listen to music.
Trying to maximize the number of pixels his eyes are taking in at one moment in time so he can get those crisp, crisp clicks on his fucking resources.
Getting those APIs up. Is that Dota?
No one has ever clicked a tooltip so accurately in their life.
So that's, look. It was a difficult road I walked. And I understand that, like, people have doubts about, like, needless indulgence.
It's okay. Our company is in great shape, Rob. I think you actually made some quality financial decisions this week.
Fuck.
It's true. It's cool. It's cool here.
It just needs to hold together.
Hey, wait. Hey, Rob, wait. Okay. Let me just read a completely unrelated message from a chat between Rob Zachney and I. Do you have any candles line budget items? Let me see when that message was sent. Rob Zachney asked me this question. 3/15/2023. Are there any candles line budget items? To which I said, no.
You know, you put it that way, the bias lighting kind of sounds like candles.
Yeah, Rob.
That's what's causing the price of this TV to be so high.
I know this is an irrational purchase.
Right.
But I like this device. Like, I was like, every time I was like, I don't need this device.
It'll go right next to your Surface.
Hey, Rob, can I have your Surface?
Wow. I'm sorry. I actually really hurt Rob on that one.
He's done.
Rob,
he's out. Rob. He's gone.
My you Surface got stolen.
I want to check and make sure Rob has still got a pulse.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
My God, he is broken in half.
I need to make a little confession about the Surface. And it really, actually, Patrick, this was me last night. It really hit me. So remember, I bought the Surface right as they discontinued that version of the Surface and replaced it with a newer version.
Yes, famously bad time to buy a Surface.
And I was like, I love this thing. It's great. It's like the perfected version of this Surface. And there's a lot of things I like about it. I still use the Surface. It's been a great laptop. And I was going to say lapdog, but it's been a great laptop. No, actually, that's the problem. It's been a good portable PC. It's been a decent tablet and all that stuff. But the little kickstand, when you're trying to sit there and you're watching sports, you're trying to watch TV and you're trying to do work, you have to sit with your legs crossed or something. Mm-hmm. Or you just like are sitting with your feet flat on the floor. That little kickstand sucks to sort of like balance the little.
They're all stuff. even the one that you were impressed by, that like Apple one on the iPad, like it, they're not really meant. Like,
yeah, but I think they literally function poorly on a next lap. Build of the Surface, like basically gave it a proper laptop mode.
Mm.
Like literally, I think the one they released months later was like, it has all the convenience, and then also it just works like a laptop and sits like a normal ass laptop in your lap. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be honest here, because I didn't want to admit that like there were flaws with the Surface. I didn't want to face this truth. But I did have to admit to myself at a certain point that it's like, I was going out of my way to avoid using it as a laptop at moments when I really wanted a laptop. Like there were so many moments where I was like, I would love to like sit here on the couch, do a little work while watching TV. And then I would justify like, you know, I'll just, you know, when I want to work, I go to the kitchen table. That's just as good. I can watch the screen from there. Yeah. I hate that little kickstand.
You know, problems for another day. You know, you can't solve everything at once.
No.
Eventually you hit a max on your credit card.
Eventually you do hit that. But when that day comes and the sheriff's department kicks down the door to reclaim some of these possessions,
Jesus.
They will.
This is why Rob shifted their setup. So there's a door right behind you. Like we'll be able to see that happen.
They're not coming through that door. That's pretty tough to break down. It'll be the door downstairs, but I got a clear sight line in the stairwell. Post up here.
But you can get up that. You can get out that door, right? From inside. That's your means of egress.
Yeah, exactly. I can just like. Now I won't be able to bring everything with me, but I think I'll bring the Corsair. I'll be running down the street with the Corsair Christ. Under my arm.
Okay. You know what? I don't, you know, I know we've had complicated feelings about AI art, but is it possible that one could generate an image of Rob running from a sheriff's department holding a Corsair PC?
We don't need AI art. We don't need that.
I'm sorry. Even Ivan pushed the line. I need to see if I could get that generated.
Well, while you examine that, why don't we get into at least some of the games we've been playing? We'll take a break here real quickly, because obviously there's a lot to catch up on with the various mistakes I've made with my life. But before we, you know, maybe just shift topics a little bit and talk about like getting right with nature and sort of degrowth, that sort of thing. Ren, you've been playing a bit of Terranil. What can you tell us about it?
So Terranil is a, I think, pretty interesting little strategy game that is about environmental restoration and kind of going into devastated ecosystems and trying to like rebuild them through technology that to me borders on magical thinking.
This is my apartment.
It's just like Rob's apartment, right down to the belief that purchasing a new piece of technology will be able to finally dig you out of the miles deep hole you found yourself in terms of like, you know, poor structures and like, you know, misthought out strategies for kind of building your life, right? And Terranil picks up in the wasteland, much like a crawl space underneath your stairs after years and years of environmental neglect, and has you, the player, placing objects in an environment to effectively do terraforming to rehabilitate a bunch of environments. Each ecosystem has like specific things that it is built around. So, for example, the first environment you're in is entirely built around humidity. If you keep the humidity right and you like put all the plants back, you're good. But it gets more complex as it goes on. So, for example, in the polar environment, which I'm fucking with right now, you have to deal with the toxicity of the surrounding environment, the average temperature in the region, and also the humidity. And like balancing these things allows the environment to ideally come back to its best. The cool thing about this is that, you know, you're doing your standard like placing objects to like get resources, or in this case, create resources in an environment. And then once you have finished terraforming, you then have to go back through in reverse and recycle everything to kind of take away all of the human-made objects in the environment and reset it back to the way it was before any ecological devastation fell upon it. And it is honestly like a really clever little strategy game.
So what is it? Because like, I feel like when I've encountered city builders that have tried to be a bit more, so I've been more traditional city builders that try to get at this concept of like, you know, try and have a bit more what's called like a solar punk vision or things like that. But a lot of times they end up falling into this trap of like, we have basically taken the same progress curves that exist in every other city builder you've ever played, but now we've just given them like green names, right? Where it's like, okay, well, like, you know, here you'll build a wind farm version 3, and it will, hey, what do you know, the wind farm version 3 generates way more power than like, you know, coal plant version 3, so like I'll build the wind farm, and then we power up all the same old shit and it's all the same. Like, how is this sort of dodging that trap?
So there is only one power source per region. So it's not like you are upgrading better versions of, there is no upgrading, right? You're not like putting down a thing and then being like, I would like a more efficient X, Y, or Z. Instead, it is that you are being like, okay, I'm going to place down a windmill and this windmill can support, you know, X number of things. And it's much more like, how can I place objects in such an order that I am shaping the environment in this particular way? So like, first you go, you put down a windmill and the windmill generates power, and then you put down a toxin scrubber and the toxin scrubber cleans the soil around it and allows you to put down an irrigator. And then the irrigator, like, you know, applies water to everything. Then if you put a thing on the irrigator, that water then turns into that plant area you've created of like grass turns into a wetlands, for example, right?
Oh, that's kind of cool, yeah. So it's a lot of like second and third order like stuff happening?
Yes, even sometimes even like fourth. So for example, in the screenshot I've just sent, there is a jungle, like a forested can, like a rainforest with a canopy, a mangrove, like a field of mangroves, and then a more traditional forest. And so the way, for example, that you get a mangrove like forest is that you put down a toxin scrubber, clean the environment, then put down an irrigator. The irrigator then puts plant matter throughout. You turn the irrigator into a, I forget what the thing is called, but it makes it a wetlands. And then finally you put down a fourth object, which turns the wetlands and like gives them the correct climate for mangroves to grow. And the mangrove biome and the wetlands bio are considered two different things. And the end of the goal is to build the environment in such a way that the animals that used to live there are able to return to a habitat that resembles the one that they had originally. So, for example, like an otter would need, I think like, actually, no, let's go with beavers. Beavers need to be near a river and near a forest. Bears need to be on a hill in a forest and in a forest that has active beehives, which are used to grow flowers. And they need those three things. And so you're trying to, basically it's like this multi-layered and multi-step approach to rebuilding an environment from scratch. And then once you've finished and found like selected areas when the game is like, yes, animals could live here, that's when you start the recycling process and then try to do all of this in reverse and do like the correct order of operations to pull everything out without collapsing the environment again.
Oh, that's also interesting.
Yes.
Okay, and so there's kind of like a tools down, like now let this thing run.
Yes.
Without intervention.
Right. And also like that is the end. And also you have to have built your resource networks in such a way where things are accessible. So, for example, in like one region, the recycling system is built on waterways. And so you have to maintain the waterways and keep clear routes to everything in such a way that like your recycling drones won't get stuck pathing through an environment that you accidentally disassembled and recycled too early. And in doing so, lost like an essential piece of infrastructure that would allow your recycling drone to get to location like Y or Z.
Now, having known some people who've tried to do things similar, right? Like some friends of MK's family were trying to do a thing where it's like, we're going to like, they built their retirement home, et cetera. There's like her mom's friends. And they're like, we want to be a good home for pollinators.
Yeah.
In my view, it ended up not being an amazing home for pollinators, but it did turn into a good home for a lot of other critters maybe you didn't necessarily want around your house. And I'm curious, does this game have anything where it's like, if you get the balance a little bit right, can you like end up with a distorted ecosystem where it kind of works, but it's like kind of not what you're going for?
No, and this is part of the problem that I have with Terranil at the end of the day, is that this is a game that is, I think its heart is very much in the right place. But it is a game that, through its structure, so clearly believes that we have the ability to fix things. And that, like, we are the ones who should be able to fix things, as opposed to looking at the shit we fucked up and being like, okay, we have fucked this up so deeply that we should let this environment restore itself naturally over time. Which is, like, oftentimes the actual answer to like severe environmental damage. It is that like environments are very good at reestablishing themselves. And this is a game that believes wholeheartedly that it is people's like not only responsibility, but like there is this like there's a phrase the game uses at the end where it's like, once we leave and recycle everything, we return the land to the animals who are the new stewards of this environment. And that like language of stewardship and the idea that like there is still a we are the masters of the earth vibe mm-hmm. going on here and like at the core of the gameplay systems in such a way that like I don't think this is a game that is like convinced that you can fuck things up like that. I mean, you can fuck things up a little bit in terms of like really throwing an environment's like climate out of whack by like, for example, one of the other things you have to do is balance climate. And so, for example, a thing that you can do is burn an area of vegetation and raise the average temperature for an area, or, you know, put in a humidifier that raises the humidity in a region. And like, if you fuck that stuff up, the game will be like, hey, you have like caused mass thunderstorms in this region. But I do think that like, this is a game that imagines environments and our ability to restore them as predictable in a way that I do not think is particularly fair to the world we actually live in. I think it's a really well-made game, the thesis of which is based on like some like very techno-fetishist magical thinking about our ability to just like technology in this game is magic. It is just straight up like we can wizard our way out of the devastation that we have wrought. And like, I think its heart's in it. His heart is very much in the right place, but I am unsure if it like really comes together for me as like a game with something to say, as opposed to just like a really excellent little strategy game that I think is like has some like really clever design elements merits, to it.
I will say that still sounds really interesting as opposed to like, how do I get the yuppies to move in, which is the arc a lot of us end up on in games of a similar nature. But I know you have a heart out.
I was just gonna say it's a cool game. I think it's like worth your time and like worth people like checking out, especially because of like the puzzles are fun. Looking at an environment and trying to be like, okay, right, I know that for this region I have to have a forest on a hill. How can I make this forest, how can I turn this hill that doesn't have any trees around it into a forest, is like a really cool process. So yeah, that is, those are my thoughts on Terra Nil.
God, this game sounds just like me kidding out my office.
It's just like that, Rob.
Bears love bias lighting.
Mm-hmm. They do. They do.
That's how you create a nourishing, restorative environment for them. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break here. And Ren is going to go out and take care of some business. But remember, Waypoint Plus listeners get this podcast ad-free. So you can learn more at waypointplus.com and see how you can fill this break with nothing but cool tunes.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And we're back. So there's some other games I wanted to hit before we moved on to questions. Patrick, I saw that you and Kato played a few games last week, but I wanted to ask you about one. I may not get the pronunciation right here. Chia?
Just lop off the T.
Chia?
Yeah. Chia.
Yeah, like a chia pet. But it was, you know, it was an admirable attempt. Yeah, we streamed a little bit of this last week in addition to... That was Minecraft Day, right, Kato?
That was like Minecraft Day.
A series of 101s. Yeah. For myself.
Patrick asked me a bunch of questions on stream.
One for
and everything
one
goes
for me,
smoothly.
One for,
yeah.
Yeah, one for me, one for my child. We checked out. To be extremely productive, sort of an indie Breath of the Wild, a game in which you're playing. This kid who's like, she grows up off of, I forget exactly where, I can look up the exact location, that it's, but it's inspired by, you know, an actual region. But she kind of grows up with her dad off the, in this little island on their own. Her dad gets kidnapped, and then you have to go and kind of track him down. And it's a game where it's, so similar to Breath of the Wild. Like, right, you've got stamina meters for climbing things, you've got a glider in order to kind of like go between. Points, the thing that kind of differentiates it, which I think is like shown really well in the like 30 minutes or so we played, is this ability to it's like soul jump into both objects and animals. Now, is the game real specific about why do some things have a soul that you can bond to and others don't? This rock got a soul.
Yeah.
This deer got a soul. These trees, they don't have souls. No. But you know,
this lamp has this a soul.
Well, that's true. You can go into a fire lamp that you can then explode, so you can kill the paper enemies.
This is a lot like a child's selective anthropomorphization of mm-hmm. things, where it's mm-hmm. like this thing, this object is my friend. These other things are furniture.
Exactly. And so it's a game where it has enormously wide spaces of geography that you're trying to cover. It has a really cool. Sailing system where, like, I know this seems really basic, but usually when you're playing games where you're piloting a boat that has more arcadey controls, it's like, I don't know, you push forward on the stick and that just invents some magic wind that pushes you forward. And that still sort of exists here, but you have to actually press a button, go to a different part of the boat, and that part of the boat determines how much wind is coming at the boat. And then you have to, you know, click out and go to another part of the boat that then, you know, you used to steer. And it's just a little layer of complexity that I think is reflective of a real kind of layer of nuance and just really interesting detail to a game that, if you heard on the surface, why, you know, an independent studio trying to do a Breath of the Wild style game. I mean, the ambition comes with a lot of rough around the edges, but I find the game to be really heartwarming, endearing. I mean, you get a classic scene where the villain you know, has a bunch of people in a cage, uses some magic to summon a little baby, like not even a toddler, like a little baby. And it summons it over like it's using the force, and it opens its mouth and then it eats the baby. Yeah. I mean, just classic just shit. Like what you're just here for.
What could be more classical than a powerful godlike father figure devouring his children?
Exactly. It's fun. I think I mentioned this on the stream, but I had requested a code for it and was like, oh, this seems like a game that might be fun to play with my daughter. And the PR person responded and goes like, how old's your kid? I was like, well, I watched the trailer. Like, they're fine. You know, they watch Gremlins and Jurassic Park. Like, this doesn't seem beyond that. And they're like, here's a link. You might want to look at a couple of things before you do that.
My parents let me watch Sleeping Beauty, and I still don't know if that was a good call at age 6 or 7.
A lot of the flow of this game is like jumping between different, you might use a rock to give you some momentum that you jump out of that. Then you go into a tree, and the trees in this game, you can push back and forth that allowed you like momentum into the air. Maybe once you're in the air, you see a bird and then you jump to that bird, and that allows you to traverse, you know, an extraordinary length across like these different land masses that you're exploring. And it's just really charming and interesting. It has like, you know, please write in if you can think of other examples, but Kato and I were kind of racking our brains to think of one. This game has a number of really good accessibility features, so the tweaks that you would want in order to make the game more palatable and playable, depending on like how much you want to interact with various parts of the gameplay elements, to the point that it has an actual skip gameplay option where like there was a sequence where when we came into the stream, I was in an area that was very plot centric, and it's not really what I wanted to show for the stream because it wasn't like the main thrust of the game. I was like, how can I just skip to get back to the big islands and oceans so I can show people that? And there's just, you just hit pause and it's like, you want to skip this gameplay? And I was like, I guess. And it's like, skip, go to the cutscene. And then it's like gameplay again. And I was like, well, that's still not the island. Skip. And it's like, it warns you. It says like, hey, you might miss out on important story beats. You might miss out on explanations of gameplay. But if you just want to be dropped at the next area, we'll just do it for you. And it's a really fascinating kind of low friction approach to, I don't know, like if you're in a particular, how many times have you been in a game with like a crappy stealth sequence? And it's like, you know what? No one is benefiting from actually finishing this. If I could just hit a button, it was like, can I just go to the end of this? There are times in my life, maybe not this game. This game's a little more on the simpler end. But if you think about it as a game that might be played by a younger crowd, I could definitely see an example where, and also because the gameplay is a little rougher on the edge. It's like, I don't know, maybe I'm just not liking this sequence and I just get me to the next beat. So it's like for that and all, many other reasons, including how beautiful it is. It is just utterly gorgeous to look at. Like moments where you get to the top of these peaks is frankly just kind of breathtaking. And so it's a game that I had not heard of, hadn't given a lot of thought to, but I definitely would recommend if you're looking to scratch, you know, a little bit of an itch before we get to, you know, Tears of the Kingdom in, well, that's the end of May, right? So about a little under two months time before that drops. This is absolutely going to give you a kind of a little bit of that feel, even if it, has different aims. There's no combat. I mean, there is, but it's not that type of game. It is much more about exploring and kind of guiding around. And for that, it does a really great job.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty cool and also a little bit gnarly in places.
It is. But you know what? I miss shit like that. I mean, like my youngest has been very into watching Gremlins 2 for whatever reason. That just sort of like scrolled across a Plex. And she's like, I want to watch that. And I was like, all right.
Is that cute little gremlins on it? Like, is that, it was just like.
Yeah, it has like a hand. And she's like, I think the poster for Gremlins 2 is because that one takes place in like the high rise, it's like the whole kind of satire of cable network news, like is like kind of what runs throughout that one. Gremlins 2 is fantastic. I don't know, there's just something about the art that captured, and I was like, all right, we'll watch it. And you know, with my kids, you know, absent something being totally out of bounds, I tend to let my kids watch something and then you tell me you're scared and we'll stop watching it. And she got very into Gremlins 2. Very confused when the one had the there's the sexy gremlin, though. I'm not sure if you remember that one. There's the spider gremlin. There's also the gremlin with like...
I have never seen a Gremlins movie.
Really?
I heard bad things happen to the cute little gremlins. And I was like, I don't know if I
Well, that's that. Mogwai. Mogwai, he is... That's the cute little furball you're thinking of. Gremlins are the byproduct of a Mogwai getting wet after midnight. And then you get the... The gremlins you want to be destroyed. They're bad. They're killing people. The gremlins are bad. Little Mogwai, though. That's the one you're trying to...
Oh, my God. Yeah, look at this.
I think they're all cute little Furby little fuckers.
No. There's just one. There's just one of those.
Okay.
Gremlins are all the creatures.
I never understood. I thought the whole thing was like, okay, the cute little furry creatures are like murderous, evil shitheads.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so yeah, this poster that Kato has shared gives you the general vibe.
The Gremlins.
That is a gnarly poster that you have posted here. I don't think that's official.
I think that's some fan art there. But it gets the point across. Gremlins are the evil ones. The cute one is
not. The point I was making there was, you know what? Kids, the edges are sanded off of too much kids content is what I will say. No, you can find it. There is like some decent, but what used to pass for PG, PG-13 when we were growing up, we've gone too far, is what I'll say. Like, the stuff being like a little bit gnarlier, like, is healthy for kids sometimes. They should be a little shocked every once in a while when they watch their television.
On the other hand, I think about the fact that way too young, I somehow encountered both The Godfather and Martin Scorsese's Casino.
Well, I don't. And Rob, for the rest the most of Rob answer, like, so you know, like I watched E.T. a little younger than other kids, and when he almost dies in the movie, that really freaked me out. And I don't know that I need to see that Casino. What do you mean? How do you see the Casino and The Godfather too early? Like flicking through HBO?
No, my dad would like he talked
set you down to show it to you.
So no, he just didn't turn it off while he was watching it. Oh, and so I came and I watched a fair bit of it.
All right, okay.
But I became convinced that like. Any movie with a certain vibe, at any moment, you didn't know when or why or like how, someone would die in a car bombing. And to this day, anytime there's like any sort of like mafia adjacent, crime adjacent movie, there is like a low like background radiation level of like anxiety and terror I have watching it because I'm like, oh my God, they're going to drive somewhere. Oh my God, here we fucking go.
Here comes the bomb.
I knew it. Here it comes. That car's going to explode. Yeah.
Patrick, is
imagine
this the
my
poster?
Shock when I finally watched Casino for real while I had COVID and discovered that De Niro, even though they show him getting blown up in the opening sequence, that's a fake out and he survives that initial car bombing.
Is this the poster?
Yes, Kato. This is the poster.
This is very amusing to me that this would attract your child's attention for some reason because all the signifiers here are like,
oh, that's
things
giving
I
Boss
wouldn't...
Baby vibes.
Yeah, the naturally.
Yeah,
seen Boss Baby. That movie's all right. There were shitty child fare that you could watch,
but not as good as people made it out to be.
Did you watch Boss Baby?
Yeah, I watched Boss Baby. It was fun.
I still haven't seen the Boss. Do we have to do the next My Turn on
My Turn?
Boss Baby.
Boss Baby. Yeah. No. I would have told you that like it'd be the kind of movie that if you got stuck watching it with like a niece or nephew, like you could have a worse way to spend, you know, 90 minutes. But I would. Sure. It's not an animated film that I would have gone out of my way to recommend to people. That is for sure.
Whereas like Paddington lived up to the hype. Like people were like Paddington movies are like really special.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, we have not watched those with my kids yet. But I'm waiting because I wanted them to get old enough that I don't want to watch it in 15-minute chunks. I was like, when I sit down with my oldest, I want to watch it. I've heard Paddington 2 is even better than the first and is spectacular. Something about a jail sequence, like I've heard many times, is unbelievable in Paddington 2. But I have not seen those movies yet. But I'm genuinely excited to see them sometime. So let's get it. It's my turn, Paddington. That's what I want. No Boss Baby. We can watch Paddington, though.
Yeah.
Now I just need to figure out how to connect up Mandy to Paddington. We'll figure it out somehow. Man, I just realized I did not eat breakfast today.
Wow.
Good thing I have this granola Imperial Stout.
Excuse me?
Yeah, it's
this podcast is just the entire Rob Zachney arc. Like
keep it crunchy.
It's from Omegang. It is their OMG series, and it's 8% alcohol by volume. This hearty granola stout is the perfect companion for your next outdoor, well, nope, for your next outdoor adventure. You know, the indoors are the new outdoors.
Uh-huh.
Elaborate and flavorful, keenly suggestive of the balanced complexity of Mother Nature. Be prepared to be elevated to chocolate foam-capped mountainous heights.
Sounds like
only Patrick in Greer to share this with. This is the sort of beer that you'd like leave the table, and I got us a picture of the granola stout.
You did do that once. Do you have any preference on beer? And I was like, just nothing. Nothing particularly dark came back from the bathroom.
No. You said no stouts, so I got a black lager.
You knew what the fuck you were doing.
I didn't. I was being very literal. I was innocent at that moment.
Oatmeal stouts are a thing. So like this is, you know, one step removed, right? Granola, oatmeal, both things that. I don't know where I was going.
Yeah, there's something that's like oats and granola. Like there's both grains involved and sugar and sweets.
Yeah.
Patrick, you also have another game here, Storyteller. Can you tell us a little bit about Storyteller?
Yeah, we mentioned it briefly on the last podcast where we had an interview with the game's designer. So hopefully people enjoyed that chat. It was a delight talking to them. That game has since launched. I have played most of the game now. Storyteller is a game in which essentially like imagine comic book panels at the top. And at the bottom, you have different characters, like let's say like thief or prince or knight. And then different settings like wedding, execution, revive, cemetery. And then at the top is a description of a scenario. And what you are supposed to then do is use these characters and settings to enact that scenario. So let's say it's like, knight kills queen, right? And it's like there's a kidnap setting. So it's like, then you place the knight on the left and you place the queen on in the kidnapping section. And then like he can take the throne in like the throne room. And like that's how you end up solving it in the game. Remixes these ideas thematically based on different chapters in a book. So it's like frequently what's happening is like the first section is teaching you the basic rhythms of what are going to be more complex puzzles. Like one of them involves a butler murdering like the duke that he's working for. And then the more complex version of that is like, how can you get the detective to discover that the that he committed the murder. Another one is like, how can you get the detective discover that he committed the murder while like being observed? And like, there are like layers to these different sort of puzzles. It's really delightful. I really enjoy the time I spent with it. It is, I think, kind of when you and I played it last summer, I definitely had the impression that maybe there would be a little more creativity involved in terms of how the player arrives at their solutions, and that these are like puzzles to solve, but like the band between like what it's asking of you and how you get there would be a little wider than what actually is in the game, or at least how I've played it has felt very much. It's never like I'm trying to jam in a hyper specific solution, but it's specific enough that there are times that I wish the game allowed the player to like the title of the game, Storyteller, certainly seems to give an implication that you'll be doing some storytelling.
Yeah.
And yes, there are stories being told as a result of solving these puzzles, but there's not a whole lot of creativity involved in accomplishing that process. And that is not necessarily a fault as much as I actually think when I've played like 70% of the game according to the menu, and it mostly seems like this establishes like a really interesting but like limited possibility space for what is possible given the tools they have here, and that I'm like really excited if they get an opportunity to make another one of these where they were able to expand that band out a little bit, because it's very satisfying to do.
Yeah.
But there are definitely times, especially as the game goes on, where I, now again, this is my own like aversion to puzzles in general, like where I enjoy a puzzle up until the point that I no longer am, which I know seems like a pretty like weird and arbitrary decision, but is that if I run into a brick wall in terms of solving a puzzle, I tend to just sort of fall apart. Mm. Time to like really think through how this is going to work. What are other ways that I could do it? It's like, no, now I'm not having fun and I'm going to look up a solution. Now that hasn't really happened here, but I can definitely see like as the game is getting more complex, it seems to be going in that direction where it's like, okay, now we're not just three panels, but we're nine panels. And so like, where did I mix this one up? You know, like that kind of layer of like complicated puzzles is like getting right up to the edge of where, at least my own personal like frustration limit with how puzzles tend to work. I haven't quite hit it, but I can feel myself getting awfully close. And maybe it never will. And that'll be a testament to the game itself that it manages to run that fine line. But yeah. Very cute, very neat. I don't think it quite lives up to the potential of the tools in front of it, but I think there's a lot they could do with it if they took another whack.
Right. Especially in those early ones that we played on the demo, there were definitely
the Adam and Eve one is not even in the game. They got rid of that.
Wow. And like,
the Adam and Eve, there's like an Adam and Eve puzzle that was in the demo, unless it's later, but I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that that's just not present in this shipping version of the game. I remember one of the things that struck me about that sequence was just like how many different thing combinations it felt like we could do.
Yes.
It did feel a little more open-ended and that it feels much more boxed in here. Like much more authorship felt from the puzzle designers here.
Right.
As opposed to, I think there could have been a really interesting ebb and flow in the game where you were going between ones that are more tightly wound to like figure out what are they asking me to do here, and other ones that are a little more like, hey, you know, like just have some fun and you'll kind of arrive at a goal and you'll kind of tell the story in your own unique sort of way. I haven't felt that like level of freedom here, at least what I've played of it.
I was curious because I linked one of the GIFs from the Steam page where it shows two different options, like one of the early ones, it seems like three panel, three characters, two scenes, love and death.
Yeah.
And you can kind of, they show it just being rearranged in like two different outcomes that both quote unquote solve it, and you can move on. But you're saying that essentially as they get longer and more complex, there tends to be fewer outs in a way, or like less of that variability that
I'm just not seeing them, right? Like that is entirely possible, where like, you know, it's very natural as the complexity of the puzzle expands, you're also going to more hyper fixate on what you think is the solution to it and how to tailor that to happen, as opposed to thinking of a brand new entryway into the puzzle itself. I have found that it is a pretty narrow band in terms of what you can accomplish, but they're still very satisfying. Like, it's just, I think I just got a different sense from playing that demo of how wide that spectrum would be.
Right.
And the finished product seems to be a little more tailored towards the clever idea that they came up with. And it's still fun to to reverse engineer how you get there, because I mean, like it is really delightful to sometimes like one puzzle is just off, and it's just like, you can hit a button to like literally take a panel you've already constructed and just move its place.
Mm-hmm.
And then to watch that kind of like all, like it has a very satisfying animation when it solves, where it like kind of like swoops through and, you know, shows you like a little, like the characters then animate and like show you exactly how that sequence is playing out to enact the solution. And all that is very good. I think it's just one of those situations where I really like what's here and just like would have loved for it to be a little bit more. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not enjoying what's on the page itself.
Mm-hmm.
So some quick hits from me. Patrick, you'll be shocked to know that I did not play through Resident Evil 2 and 3 over.
You did send me a message though at one point, right? Something about Resident Evil? No?
Yeah, no, I'm playing through 2. I restarted.
Okay, so I did not imagine that. I was like,
having a blast. going through it a lot easier than I did the first time around, I think. I don't know. It's weird. It could just be King of Executive Function stuff, where it's like just easier for me to sort of see the path of the game and just execute on it. But I think the big thing is I don't know. It feels like between when I first played it, right around when it came out, and now, I feel like the zombies are getting up more than they were. Like, I do not remember them just getting the fuck up every time I put them down.
They're much more aggressive in, I mean, Resident Evil 2. Yeah, because I think what you asked me was how much cleaning, like how many of these zombies do I need to kill?
It's because I was like, I don't think I can afford to keep like clearing these hallways.
You can't. You can't. Like a lot of Resident Evil 2 is, you know, if you can luck into a room that has like a line of desks in the middle and you can just kite or just be running around. What I remember end up doing in that game, the bulk of it, the best part of the game takes place in the police station, is just using the architecture of the police station to your advantage, where you have certain rooms that eventually, if you can just avoid entirely, like I remember there's an area in the police station where I think it's a library. And there's like
using the library to juke through, like, around that long exterior hallway where it's just like one choke point after another. I'm always going through the library and up like to get to that side of the police station, because otherwise there's that hallway of death where it's like mm-hmm. it's single file. If two zombies show up, that is all your ammo.
Yes, yes. And it certainly gets more complicated when because you probably have not encountered Mr. X yet, right?
No, I just finished, so now I'm in the jails, so I just had that pretty shitty boss fight, I have to say, of, like, literally being chased in circles by a guy with a big eye growing out of his arm, and it was like, shoot the big glowing eye, and I was like, all right, I feel like I've been doing this for quite some time. I have been going around, and the encounter space was such that, like, there was one circle that, like, left you with all movement options. Otherwise, you get cornered somewhere. Yeah. So I just ran around, you know, the same block of piping for like, I don't know, 10 minutes.
Lining up your shots, just slowly pelting him to death.
Waiting for the eye to reappear.
Yeah.
As he just sort of lumbered around, I was like, all right, like, could really do with this eye showing up. Maybe I'll try shooting him in the head. Maybe that'll bring the eye out. It did. But yeah, it went on for quite some time. But either way, though, what a good game. Having a blast.
It's great. Did you ever make it to the Mr. X part in your original playthrough?
I think I stopped just before that.
Okay, because that is where Mr. X, which is a character present in the original, but is, I think, you know, like Resident Evil 4, you know, it just came out, and Ren was going to talk about that, but, you know, had to depart, so I'm sure we'll chime back in on that next week, because her and I are both going to be out this week, but I really like the Resident Evil 2 remake. I wrote as much, but I think something that is clearer to me now as I spend more time with it and, you know, think about you playing Resident Evil 2, and I adore the Resident Evil 2 remake. I think it is like a terrific accomplishment, and part of why I think it's terrific is because Resident Evil 2 had enough distance when it was being remade that they could actually do the part of like there's a reimagination of what is that game.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 4, despite being, you know, 20 years old or whatever, like it's a modern game. Like you go and play that game now. Kato, you just did this, right? Yeah. Like there are plenty of quality of life control scheme things that you can tell that it's a game from a different era. But like broadly, like those bones are like really good. Like that game is still fantastic. And what they ended up doing in the remake is there's not a lot of reimagining. It's updating. It's cleaning it up. It's like polishing it to an nth degree, but it's not reimagining. And part of what's so great about Resident Evil 2 is they were given license by that.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 2 looking like an ancient game. There's less hangups and also just fewer people to complain if they decide to just change how this, you know, many like basic elements of the game work outside of like the general plot structure and the layout.
Though, Patrick, I will say this, because Resident Evil 2 originally was a lot more like Resident Evil 1, right? Where it's like you're going to have sort of your fixed camera angle positions and it's that sort of combat.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing I hadn't done when I played a little bit of Resident Evil 2. I had not played Resident Evil 1 with you by that point.
Right.
And so I'm sitting here and there's a lot of places now where I feel like, oh, this space would really be an amazing Resident Evil 1 style space, but it actually feels a little cramped and almost overly simplified for these movement controls.
Mm.
in a way that, like, I'm having a blast. It's got great atmosphere. Like, it's a tremendous remake. But I am sitting there being like, I can see the places where, like, there's foundations of a very different sort of game here. And in some ways, it feels like those foundations are still more appropriate to that style of game. And I'm like, maybe I should be playing original Resident Evil 2.
As someone that has played, like, with Resident Evil 4, I can go either way. I think the update is fantastic, but I think you could play, you know, one of the like recent re-releases of Resident Evil 4 and have an incredible time. I think Resident Evil 2 is harder to, like, you can appreciate it. You'd have fun with it, Rob, but I think the remake is giving you a closer approximation of what it was like to play that game at the time, right? Like, I think Resident Evil 2 is still, the original, still, like, eminently playable, but it feels old. And I think that's part of what I found so brilliant about that update, was that it runs that fine line. And Resident Evil 4's remake mostly is closer to feeling like it's not just a fidelity update, but it's I almost wish they had been given more license to, look, if you're going to do this, like, really put your own spin on it. Like find your own creativity in this world. The original still exists, and Capcom's not pretending it doesn't. And that's great. I love that you can still go buy that original game on any platform that you want to. And it'll feel good and it'll run well. But, like, they didn't really give themselves, or Capcom didn't allow that team, which is the same team that did the Resident Evil 2 remake. Like, they feel more constrained creatively here. And, like, at this point, I'm really hoping, if they move on to, like, a Code Veronica, a game that would require a lot of, like, creative reinterpretation to make that work, I really would like that team to get a chance to make their own original Resident Evil game. Like, that creative team has so many cool ideas, and I'd love to see them unshackled from, like, nostalgic expectations. It's like, look, find some other, like, junior members to go work on these, like, series of remakes that the studio is clearly working through, and we're getting one more. You know, Resident Evil 7, 8, 9 are supposed to be a trilogy of games, so we'll get another one of those in the next couple of years as well. But I just think that team has earned the right to, I think, try and reduce some of that tension you're getting at, Rob, which is, like, what when you are working with that framework, even if you're giving yourself a lot of license to reimagine how it works, it's still that original framework, and that's going to feel a little odd at times.
When was the last time you touched 4, Patrick? The original.
Well, when I was supposed to do that stream before my kid got sick, right. That was the, well, I played a little bit of the Oculus VR remake. So I probably played like 2 hours of that one. But in terms of, like, playing Resident Evil 4, I mean, I don't think I've played it since, I don't know, some older re-release. So, like, I mean, at least 10, 15 years, probably.
Because it seems like, for the most part, you're right about, like, at least environmentally, and, like, it's a lot of the same things with, like, new coats of paint. But the way I had forgotten that this game, you can't move while you're aiming in this game.
No.
I had forgotten that holding the aim button for the knife and that you hit the A button to shoot. And it's not a left trigger, right trigger situation. Mm-mm. The ways that you interact with this game are so specific that it feels like that's the most drastic change right now. And I've actually seen a few people kind of, and I didn't get my hands on the new one, so I'm not 100% sure how this plays out, but that there has been something changed where there's, like, parries now? Did you hit that in the new one? It feels like
So you can use the knife to parry basically any basic attack from an enemy, and that will, I think, mostly minimize the damage that comes in and then damages your knife. It's repairable. There are both throwaway knives that, like, break and then disappear, and you have to collect or buy more. Or your main knife can be repaired and upgraded at the merchant. So, like, that parry system does not exist in the original. The closest you get to that is, you know, if you're, you can't really do it on the GameCube version, but I think you mentioned this kind of talking about the Wii version, where, like, you could, you know, shoot an axe, a thrown axe out of the air. Like, the aiming is so slow and unwieldy in the original. That would be, I'm sure it's technically possible.
It is. But I did it on accident. And it's definitely one of those things that you don't mean to do, but then a bullet hits an axe mid path, and you're like, "Oh shit, that's awesome! I hope that happens again." But like,
the Easter egg that was going around this morning, where in New Game Plus in the new Resident Evil 4, you can start the game with a sniper rifle, and if you go up to the top of one of the buildings in the village area and look at the skybox in a very specific direction, you can see the bell that ends that encounter, and if you shoot it with the sniper rifle, you can trigger the bell and end the village encounter immediately. Which is, and you can't do it when, I doubt you can do it with the pistol. I think you have to have this
the sniper
post-game
rifle.
Weapon, yeah. But it's super cool.
That is very good. But honestly, just like, I don't know, even like with the modern Resident, like the set, like 7 and stuff, I don't think they leaned in as hard into, like, a parry is wild to me. The fact that there's a parry in a Resident Evil game, like, the way you play that game is you take a couple pot shots and then you fucking run, right? It's about mitigating, like, both ammo usage and, like, these, like, waves of enemies that come at you, and, like, a lot of that is just
kiting. It's all crowd control.
It's
all RE4 is defined by.
Yeah. And it's just, like, that felt like such a drastic change that I feel like that's the kind of thing that they were looking to make changes, because it was so modern. It's like just the combat flow becoming even more action oriented, and it's just like, I don't know, I feel like I'm really curious to get my hands on it too, because it feels like if it's required, right, if it's like this is the new combat flow, it feels like more drastic of a change in the ways that RE controls than adding non-tank controls to one, for example. I don't know. Because you still kind of are doing the same sort of... Yeah.
I don't parry that much.
Okay.
Like, parry is like is like an emergency, you know, like, I fucked up.
Right.
I'm backed into a corner.
It definitely...
You know, sort of the way...
Yeah.
So like, when you kneecap somebody... And then that triggers
which you
the
can't
melee.
Do the kneecap anymore, does it? Like, this is the other thing I've heard, is that people...
No, you can't. No, that's, like, still 100% the flow of playing Resident Evil 4 is, like...
Kneecap him, and then you roundhouse kick him.
Yes.
And then
that's how you're, like,
swipe
establishing
your knife a million
some...
times while they're on the ground.
Yeah, no, that is still 100%. Like, they have not gotten rid of that. That is definitely what you are doing in the update as well. And it's just, because... You know, when you're playing that game, you kind of, you know, you can hit him with like two pistol shots, the kneecap, you get the melee, and that will often kind of like disperse a couple of enemies in front of you and like give you a little bit of breathing room. Essentially, the parry is another version of that, which is like, okay, if that didn't work and a guy still encroaches on you, you can hit L1 and like parry them away and kind of push them back. And it's all about giving you space in crowd control. Right. And that's just like another... added technique. If I have not found myself, it's one of the things that I used a handful of times when it was introduced, and now, you know, most of the way through the game, like I have not
parried.
I used it a couple of times.
It did feel like Ren had to do it a lot but I forgot, she chose some ridiculous she picked some ridiculous hardest mode or some shit. I don't remember what was going on there.
That was a great choice for the conceit of that stream. So the other thing, just to touch on really briefly, I played a lot of The Great War Western Front. I talked about this previously on the podcast. It's a it's sort of a hybrid, strategic level war game about World War One, but then the tactical battles are RTS style. It's made by Petroglyph Studio. And like, I enjoyed it. I wrote a review on the site. You should check it out. The thing I would sort of add to it is that, like, while I liked it, I do think that one of the things this game was sort of trying to tackle is capturing that even though World War One is a lot of stalemate, to try and break the stalemate, every side in the war is like frantically trying to research like new tactics, new weapons that are going to help them, you know, crack this thing. And the way it all ends up panning out is that most of these things cancel each other out, you know, like new tactics succeed once because nobody's seen them before, and then they get countered, and then they're not successful as much anymore. The arc of chemical weapons, when various armies started deploying them, chemical weapons were terrifying and devastating. And then within a surprisingly short amount of time, the other side would be having gas masks that could counter whatever was the chemical weapon you were deploying. So it wasn't effective anymore. So then you have to invest more time into researching a new chemical, and that would work once, and so on and so forth. But the big thing that happens sort of toward the end of the war is this notion of the image we all have of, like, the, you know, sending guys in waves over the top of the trenches in World War One. That kind of stops being what is happening later in the war. There's a lot more, like, what are called, like, bite and hold attacks, where you actually target a much smaller, like, local section of the line and get troops up into position and slowly begin, like, almost crowbarring the position open. A lot more, like, infiltration tactics, etc. And a lot more, like, you know, stuff that's readily adaptable to an RTS, like, a lot more unit types. You know, different sorts of specialist troops being deployed for this thing. And those things are in the Great War Western Front. But the problem is the game, because every tactical battle is basically just a, you know, your side is on the bottom of the map, the other side is on the top of the map, and you sort of push forces from one side over to the other. And every battle, you're seeing the same map again and again, depending on which territory you're fighting over. And it evolves with time. Like, trenches will stay there once they've been dug. But it ends up being, like, a lot of, like, kind of out-of-context battles. And so that ends up kind of undercutting the whole thing a little bit, where it is a, like, you have those specialist units, but they're kind of just like you throw them in with your attack wave, but they don't really behave meaningfully differently than the units you've been playing around with the entire time. The game can't really, like, comprehend the way the war is changing as it goes on. So that's kind of the beef I had with it. In addition, so there's a lot of repetition, but I think the big things it's trying to get across about, like, this is the way the war is evolving. It's kind of there, but the game is so simplified that it can't really bring out, like, why are these things special? Why are these things so important as innovations? In this game's rendering, like, flamethrower companies can be deployed, and those are really good at clearing trenches. And that's true. Like, they, you know, those were hugely important, you know, assault forces that, like, Germany in particular added to their arsenal. But it was sort of everything else that they were a part of. The entire new approach to attacking trench lines had changed around them. And that's not really how it works here. It's much more like simple RTS stuff, where it's like, these guys are a hard counter for infantry in a trench. And that's kind of it. I like it. I had fun with it. I tried to avoid my review, like, using the word casual, because that can be kind of pejorative. But I guess the
is approachable more
approachable. That is definitely more accurate. I also think there's almost, like, I'm coming around this idea of, like, there's some games that are, like, quick session games. And this is definitely one of those where it's, like, it's very easy to have a quick, satisfying, like, 30, 25 minute play session, where you play a turn, play a battle or two, and then you're out and you sort of put it aside. It's very easy to dip in and out of. There's not so much where you kind of got to get really invested in it, remember all that you're doing, and really dedicate some time and attention to it. This is much more of a, like, hey, just, like, pick it up, put it down. It's kind of fun. Reminded me a lot of a Flash game, actually, I played.
I was going to ask, like, I saw that tweet of yours about discovering a thought dead Flash game that had been revived.
Yeah. And the last, like, so Armor
Games. Saved, I guess.
Yeah. Armor Games was a, you know, one of those major Flash game developers, publishers, back in the day. And they made a lot of, like, really standout games. And then, of course, when Flash stopped being supported, all those stopped working. And then, like, just a month ago, a bunch of them were, like, restored to working order via emulation. So a bunch of their stuff.
We're emulating Flash now? Is that what we're doing?
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
And it works really
Flash,
well.
Flash, the famous, like, destroys your browser like, the reason, part of the reason Flash died was because while it was a wonderful tool for a lot of different software purposes on the web, you know, it also with the rise of the mobile phone, essentially the iPhone killed Flash, or Steve Jobs killed.
Well, right. That's really the pointed, like,
I mean, there's a whole, he wrote a whole letter about it, right? Like back in 2008 or something like that. And essentially said, we're done with this shit. And Flash's death essentially came slowly after Steve Jobs wrote that letter. But the notion that we've gone from frequently felt like a bloated piece of, internet technology to now being emulated, famously a process that requires more. I mean, now granted, computers have come a long way, but there's something just very funny about that's where we've ended up with Flash.
Yeah. But either way, it's neat to see these games come back. And this is sort of, it's a similar vibe. This is like, it is a really dressed up Flash game in some ways, or it's not like the types of games you played in the 90s. Where like things were necessarily simpler and more abstracted, and this kind of fits neatly in that style, and that's both like a large measure of its charm, but also probably speaks to some of its drawbacks. We actually, Patrick, you and I have to duck out of here for a meeting as well. So I guess we should call it a wrap on today's episode of Waypoint Radio. If you want more from Waypoint, you can follow us on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook and YouTube, Waypoint Vice. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Zachney. Patrick, where can people follow you?
You can follow me at Patrick Klepek. We're down to two. It's just you and I, Rob. I guess you can follow Kato at Kato underscore appears and Ren at Renner Raven.
And you can also check out we published on waypoint.vice.com. Hey, why don't you go read my article on the Great War Western Front, which turned into more of a survey of the subject as it exists within video games than a straightforward review. This is what happens when I'm like, I haven't really figured out like how to kick this thing off, and end up writing 1,000 more words in the middle of the night as my vacation is supposedly ending. Turns out it ended like a day earlier than I intended. Anyway, check it out. You know, it's a fair bit of work I put into it, and I'm like, damn, that's so much harder than just podcasting. Why do I go to all that trouble? Anyway.
I could just say anything into a microphone.
But I will say, I think it was more articulate and clear in my thoughts in the review. Anyway, and hey, thanks to Waypoint Plus, we've been able to have a bunch of fun streams lately. Last week, Patrick and Kato played a bunch of Chia, and there was some Minecraft happening, and then... Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Ren played the first 10 minutes of Resident Evil 4 Remastered for about an hour while Kato streamed the pause screen from the original game. So I think we'll see what our plan is for the week. Maybe less of that. We might be checking out that Zelda live stream on Tuesday. By the time you listen to this, we will either have done that or not. I might also stream a bit of the Great War Western Front as it is releasing this week.
Any motorsports? Any managing?
I might, like, you know, just me and Kato, and I have been I've been thinking about, like, we were really poised for success. Like, we really like we really had a good car this year, and I think we were really ready to wreck house. So we might dust off Oberhof Racing and see what's up there. If that sounds good, or if you just want more Waypoint, you can go to waypointplus.com and subscribe. Not only do you get access to our premium feed, but you're also helping support Waypoint and everything else we do here. And if you want to show not just support, but zeal, go to waypointgeneralstore.com and buy some of our fine Waypoint merch. Our theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Learn more at waypoint.zone/BOEN. For now, we are calling time on this Tuesday. We will talk to you again on Friday. Well, Cotton and I will. Until then, fuck capitalism. Go home, go on vacation. So you can learn more at waypointplus.com and see how you can fill this break with nothing but cool tunes.
Hey, you got to see where your money went at the beginning of this podcast.